From KCUR Studios, this is Statehouse Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. It's a weekly podcast where we meet the people and the policies of Missouri government and find out why they matter for our lives. This week, we're sitting down with the newest member of the Missouri House, Representative Barbara Ann Washington. She's a Democrat from Kansas City. Who is she? What's it like to jump right into the middle of the session? We'll find out. But first, this week in Jefferson City, the long-awaited rollout of Governor Eric Greitens' budget proposal.
We're not raising taxes on the people of Missouri. Instead, we told departments to tighten their belts. We reduced the total number of state employees, and we made tough choices.
Among those tough choices, Greitens, a Republican, would cut higher education in the state by $68 million in next year's budget. That's on top of nearly $88 million in cuts last year. The plan also proposes cutting Medicaid spending by $40 million through what the budget called, quote, cost containment initiatives, though even his budget manager couldn't say exactly what that means. On the other hand, Greitens says his budget would increase K-12 education spending by $87 million. He also says he won't support any tax increases, including to the state's gas tax, one of the lowest in the nation. That's even though lawmakers of both parties have said Missouri's roads and bridges may depend on it. Meanwhile, much of the attention, including more than half the questions at Greitens' budget press conference, were about that other story. Greitens' admission of an affair with his hairdresser in 2015, and allegations that he snapped a nude photograph of her and threatened to make it public. Having given two interviews about it last week, one with the Associated Press and one with a childhood friend who works for the St. Louis Fox television station, Greitens called it a mistake, said it was a private matter, and that he'd said just about all he had to say.
I've addressed everything in the answer that I just gave you, and in the interviews that we did over the weekend. We're now moving forward.
And the General Assembly did show signs of moving forward this week. A Senate committee held a hearing on a bill approved last week by the House that would ban most gifts from lobbyists to legislators. A similar bill has died in the Senate, though, each of the last 2 years. And if Senator Dave Schatz gets his way, the same thing will happen this time.
We have a transparent system right now. Obviously, expenditures are reported. We can have the conversation about, you know, what if we define gifts or we limit those types of expenditures. But I think as long as we have transparency, you know, sunshine is the best disinfectant.
No word yet on a Senate vote on that bill or another that got a hearing this week. A bill repealing the state's prevailing wage law. That's called a cost-saving bill for local governments, but it's opposed by unions. Senate may send its first bill of the session to the governor's desk, though. That one would require posters with messages against human trafficking in airports, bus stations, and certain businesses. Joining us to talk about everything going on in Jeff City and about herself is Representative Barbara Ann Washington, a Democrat from Kansas City, the newest member of the Missouri House. Representative Washington, welcome for the first time to Statehouse Blend, Missouri.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So what's it been like jumping in midstream? There's always a lot to learn, but usually you have other freshmen in the class to go through it with. You're all by yourself.
There's one other representative. There's a Republican, Representative Morse, who is from the southeastern part of the state, I believe. So we did start together.
Did they have a little orientation for the two of you?
We did actually have one this past Monday. Was the a brief orientation that I'll have to give thanks to Representative Jared Taylor, who is a Republican from the middle part of the state, put together a brief session for us. And I also have to say thank you to the staff of the Representative Gail McCann Beatty, because I went down in December and they definitely shook off some of the nervousness by walking me through the process and helping me to learn how to write a bill and who it goes to and what a greenback is and all of those sorts of things.
Wait, what is a greenback?
So before you can file the bill, after you've edited everything and you have it right where you want it, it has to have a greenback, and then you sign the greenback, and then you can file it, and then it goes through the process where it'll have to be read a couple of times, then referred to a committee and that sort of thing.
You know, you don't think about these things when you're talking about the policies and the politics of all of it. There's a lot of logistics. Just filling out the right form is necessary for law to happen.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of making sure you actually know the processes.
You're talking about how to file a bill. Have you actually sponsored a couple bills already?
I have a couple of what we call consent bills, which are bills that don't have any financial impact and no controversy. So I have those. And then I have a bill that I'll file on Monday, which is an issue that's really near and dear to my heart, which is to raise the age for juveniles to be charged as adults. My bill takes into consideration some other issues besides just raising the age back to 18, which it used to be. There's some other meat I've taken out of what we have now as a statute. Right now, we can actually apply for a 12-year-old to be tried as an adult, and personally, I just think that's too young. So that'll be filed Monday, and then I'll start that process with begging that it can move through the ranks.
So you're getting right into it.
I'm trying.
Let's talk about how you ended up here. In the middle of a term, you a few months ago, you were just an attorney, happily practicing your,
yes,
your trade. How did this come to be? What led to you being asked to step into this role?
I knew I wanted to run for office for a long time, and I am friends with Randy Dunn and was speaking with Randy.
Who resigned and took a job in Omaha.
So I have taken over District 23, which was Randy Dunn's position. He had been here for 5 years. And we talked about it and how to get me prepared and ready to run in 2020, which is when he would have termed out. He got an amazing opportunity to continue to do great work. He is a planner by trade and to do economic development work at a nonprofit in Omaha, Nebraska. And he shared that with me earlier in 2017 and asked if I was still going to be, was I ready to go now? And we just kind of started the process to get me ready and then to wait for the governor's announcement that he would have a special election. And I think the governor announced it, which is a special day for me, on July 31st, which would have been my mom's birthday. So that was pretty cool.
So the governor announces a special election that actually is up to the county Democratic committee to put a name on the ballot. Is that right?
Correct. So it is the Democratic committee, but only, so just for the listeners know, only those wards that are in that legislative district, those committee people, which you probably don't even pay attention to that when you vote, but you do vote for them every 2 years, who's going to represent you in the committee. And what they do is they make the decision as to who will represent their party,
yeah,
whether that's Republican, Democrat, or whomever the case may be.
And so the Republicans put a name on the ballot, the Democrats put a name on the ballot, your district.
And the Green Party put a name on the ballot as well, and then there was an independent.
And your district is a fairly strongly Democratic district.
I would say so.
where does it cover?
My district just generally covers Troost Avenue all the way to 435-ish, 35th Street or Armor Boulevard, north to 9th Street.
You mentioned that before this, you were an attorney. You're still an attorney. What kind of law do you practice?
I primarily practice personal injury and civil litigation, and a little criminal litigation. And I practice a lot of municipal court work. So thank God for the statute that allows me to get a continuance when I can't get back up here to go to court, because it is more intense than I thought it was going to be. I didn't know I had to be there on Mondays. I thought Monday would be a day. So I scheduled lots of court dates on Monday that I'm now having to change, to the chagrin of the judges who agreed to let me schedule things.
It's hard to have a professional quality legislature when people are only paid $36,000 a year and still really have to do their other jobs.
It is. So because it is a full-time job, I know the governor does not necessarily think so, but we are there every day. And we are at home in our communities working as well. When I leave here, I have a community meeting to attend. So as much as possible, I still want to meet with my constituents. We had a meeting before I left in December. So $36,000 is not a great living expense. You'll hear people say you get a per diem, and that's fine. But we spend that per diem to get there and get back and to eat and to pay rent. So $36,000 is not enough to live off of. You do need legislators to be able to earn a living so they can walk away from whatever else they were doing and put 1,000% of their concentration, efforts, and skills on making Missouri a better place.
You before you went to law school, you were a reporter.
Yes, I worked at my beloved Kansas City Star, 1729 Grand, and I worked at the Kansas City Business Journal.
What did you report on?
At the Star, I worked there as a kid, and I worked there right out of college. So whatever I was told, I know. During those intern summers, I think I worked every single Saturday covering every festival of every small town in our 10-county metropolitan area.
Well, that's not such a bad gig, I guess.
Oh, it was fun. It was very fun.
A lot of funnel cakes.
Lots of funnel cakes and turkey legs.
Oh, yes.
Yes, before they became as popular. In fact, my sister used to come home for the summer, and before she was a vegan, she would be like, do we have one to go to this weekend? I want one of those big turkey legs. So that was really fun. And it got you out there, and you got to know a lot of people. At the Business Journal, it was a totally different reader and a totally different beat. So I covered retail, which to me just means go shopping on the plaza. But to those who read the Business Journal, means we want to know how much did Helzberg Corporation make last year? What are the profit shares, earnings per profit share? Are they going bankrupt? What the restaurants are doing? And we, you know, more from a corporate perspective, which I really enjoyed because it made me appreciate where I come from a lot better.
So you come with all this experience as a journalist and as a lawyer, you get to the legislature. What was your initial impression when you got there and started seeing how it operates and meeting the people?
So we seem to all work together. Everyone is really friendly with each other. So far, there hasn't been like the big angry outbreak. There's been some passion on some bills, especially this week. But just first seeing how it works, you know, knowing that when you have a committee meeting, that's really a hearing. And even though I am an attorney and I live in the law and definitely live in the books of the law, probably wasn't 100% aware of that. So you need to, if you're bringing a bill, you need to bring witnesses, as I would as an attorney, and state your case. So that part for me has been fun, the whole cross-examination part. I'm, like, loving that part. But you do have to read and study the bills that come before you, not just to vote in the chamber, but when they're coming before you, it's encouraging to watch the citizens of Missouri, whether they're business people or union reps or just regular everyday citizens, come forth and speak the passion about those issues that are most important to them.
You mentioned something that's true about the House, that it's dominated by Republicans. They have more than two-thirds of the seats.
They do.
You are a Democrat and a very junior one at that in
yes.
the House. Do you feel like you actually can make a difference, can have an impact, or is that something you're going to need to wait a bit before you feel like you have real influence there?
I don't know how much we can, quote unquote, make a difference, but I do think by working together with the other side, we can. On the raise the age issue, the bill to raise the age of to be an adult to be charged with a crime. Right now in Missouri, it's 17 automatically. A 17-year-old is automatically charged as an adult. It used to be 18, and we want it to go back to 18. So I think that passion for me kind of works well, that we may be able to get something passed through the House and possibly through the Senate, because you have two Republicans who have the same passion. When you have some issues that are more traditionally non-Republican issues, those are going to be harder for us to push through. So we have to look to the rural Republicans, I think, more than anything, if we can. And just look for what their word they like to use, their term is common sense. I mean, we represent people, and there are people in Marshall, Missouri that are the same as the people in my district.
Do you think that can happen?
I think a little bit. I mean, this week, I was very, very scared to actually speak on the House, but it didn't appear that my fellow members understood the issue, and it was an issue that I happened to know about because it was about civil litigation and insurance companies and how they can file something.
So you gave your first floor speech already.
I did an inquiry. I'm learning the term. So after inquiring of the sponsor, I definitely know we moved the needle a little bit because they did not have 120. It did not go party line. And we probably had 20 people missing by the time we voted, but we still were able to get at least 20 of them to vote with us as Democrats, and that helps. So if we know our issues and we're being passionate about that, and if they're listening, even us sometime, if we're listening, all of us, and we actually listen to what the issue is for that bill, then maybe we can, as Democrats, we can push forward on some things that we know are important.
So you were sworn in on January 10th.
Yes.
That wasn't the first day of the session. That was a week after the session started.
Right. So myself, Mr. Morse, and actually Senator Mike Searpoy, who was a representative, we all chose to be sworn in at a later date for various reasons, but we all kind of did it together. So
I've heard that it has one reason, at least, would be that you are not going to have served more than half of a term, which means it won't count against you should you 8 years from or 7 years from now want to run again.
That is correct. So the three of us would be allowed, if the stars aligned and we wanted to do that, would be allowed to serve. Well, for Mr. Morse and I, we would be allowed to serve for 9 years.
I mean, so you have the potential to be there for 9 years. How would you like Jefferson said he'd be different by the time you retire from the State House of Representatives in 2026?
Well, one, I would like for us to come more to the people and have an explanation of how bills go, because sometimes when our residents, our constituents are voting for us, you do have that intelligent and active constituent who's going to check the House journals to see when we voted or what, you know, how we voted. But to understand how this process really goes, or you didn't file a bill, and to understand that, yes, we did file a bill, but it never made it to committee. And if it never makes it to committee, it can never come before a vote. So I'd like for us to be more informational on that. But the biggest thing is for us to take into consideration who we represent and to make sure that we are funding the projects and funding the agencies and entities that need funding to make Missouri a better place, or even keep Missouri as great as we are. When we're cutting in 2 years almost $200 million in funding to higher education, then that's a message that says we don't care about what our kids do when they leave high school. And that's bad. So we need to work on that and make sure that when we're cutting funding in places that won't hurt us as a whole, as a community.
Well, let's talk about that. That has been one of the big news items of the week. Governor Greitens rolled out his budget proposal. It did, as we mentioned at the top of the show, include a proposed massive spending cut on higher education, similar to last year. You are a trustee of the Metropolitan Community College. One of the groups that will be significantly affected, one presumes, is the community college world. How will it affect students here in the Kansas City area?
Well, last year, the cut approved by both the House and the Senate, I think, was about 6.9% or something like that. And the governor went up more than that. So MCC alone, and MCC being Metropolitan Community Colleges, which is a five-campus system here on the Kansas City side, the Missouri side, we were hit personally by, I think, about $10 million. We were blessed that we had this spare $10 million out there that we got from, we'd had a long time, and one of our community partners had given us that as a grant. So we were okay last year. We had actually prepared our own budget in anticipation of the 6.9% cut. So we were forward thinking in that, and that was a great part on our chancellor system. This year, I don't know. So we, as a community college system, and that is statewide, and I know I'm active in the organization, we have to go to our community partners. And, you know, we're going to have to ask our partners to help us so that we don't affect the students as much with a tuition raise. We did raise a little bit last year, and we're probably going to raise just a little bit this year. But we have to make up the funding if we're going to continue to offer the quality education that we feel community colleges offer in the state of Missouri.
The governor, if he were here, would say, well, we have to make hard choices. And one of the things that his budget proposal does do is increase K-12 education spending. That's important. That benefits students across the state. Why isn't that a good thing?
It is a good thing. However, the way that they increased it, they will say that last year they met the funding formula, but they filed amendments to the funding formula. So the funding formula was not the same funding formula that had been prior. So yes, you decreased and diminished the quality of the education you're providing to K-12, and then you gave the money for your diminished formula. So yes, you have K-12, but then you're cutting away things like transportation to get the kids to and from school. So neighborhood schools are fine in the rural areas. They're not always fine in Kansas City and St. Louis and Springfield and Columbia, which are metropolitan areas. So K through 12 is very important. As a trustee at MCC, I want K through 12 to have everything it has so that we can change our programs at MCC. Right now, we have a lot of remedial programs, which are not traditional for any college system. But we have to have those on the community college system because we are helping prepare kids to get to Mizzou. Or, I'm sorry, I'm a little older. I still say Central Missouri, but I know it's University of Central Missouri,
right?
Missouri State. We're having to prepare a lot more kids for that because they can't take a remedial math at any of those four-year institutions. And so when they're not ready, or even when they get there and they find out they're not ready, they're not able to go on second semester, we are the ones that pick up that slack. So we're almost K 13 through 15 now, and we shouldn't be that way. So we all need more money for education, and that should not be at the expense of our children so that we can give better benefits to those who don't need them, like businesses and other tax cuts that could help our state.
There was something else that happened the day you were sworn in. It was January 10th. It was the day of the State of the State address. I was there. It was a speech. And then something else happened.
Yeah, so my family came down. My daughter came back home from Brooklyn, New York, and was not a political person at all. And decided to stay for the State of the State. She wasn't sure, but she thought, there's some meat missing out of this speech, Mommy, don't you think? And I'm like, well, it's my first time too, but I agree. There wasn't much that the governor said. And we were not out of the building. Well, I'll be honest. Most people had already heard the rumors. I'm very rookie. I don't know any of that. But there was a strong feeling that the governor's alleged affair, well, we know he had the affair. Definitely the affair was going to be on the news, and the thought was that it was probably going to be on the news prior to the State of the State. So it was not. But the January the 10th does, I remember that more than the fact that I got sworn in for 5 minutes, that the issues with the governor with respect to the affair and the alleged blackmail and the alleged possible abuse to the unnamed woman, I presume, in the St. Louis area.
You heard the governor say at the top of the show that he has moved on. He's answered the questions he intends to answer. Are you satisfied with that?
Absolutely not. You haven't answered the questions. Just because you say no is just not enough. And I'm more disappointed by the fact that the governor is in hiding. This is my first time being down there. I don't know how much the governor walks around. I don't know how much you see him. We had the State of Judiciary on Wednesday. I'm not sure if he's supposed to be there. If I was in hot water and news all over the world, my brother works for Al Jazeera in Doha, Qatar, and they've reported it, I probably would be a little more amenable to the media and amenable to my legislatures. He asked for people's phone numbers. Clearly he didn't need mine. You don't know me. I have no impact. He asked for legislators' phone numbers, I know, and I don't know if that's the best way to call, and I don't know what you said and who you called, but the governor needs to address the issues that are not only important to the senators and the representatives, but important to Missouri. And I don't think anyone is satisfied at this point with his just blatant no, especially with his actions of, you know, you didn't have a big, gigantic press release. The way you released your budget, these are not normal things that would happen with any governor, including yourself.
Think you should resign?
I think we should talk to him about it. I think we need to hear more. I don't think that he can put full concentration on the State of Missouri right now, which is what we need. And if we can't see that coming shortly, then he may need to investigate resigning. I know that there are several of us, when I say us, the members of both the House and the Senate, that feel that he should resign. I do think that in this age of women finally getting the strength to speak up to what is happening to them, we know that he had an affair. We don't know how. As now I have to step into a lawyer side. We don't know the authenticity of the tape. I will say, when I mix my reporter in my lawyer life, she's yet to deny the tape. She has never issued a statement saying that's not me. She's never issued a statement saying I didn't say that. And if those things are true, then yes, he absolutely should resign, because no one, no man, especially being the chief of our state, should ever be putting himself or our state at risk to be that disrespectful to women, that overpowering. And you, that would be the pure definition of sexual harassment, to use your power over a woman.
Incredibly enough, you just started in the House, and now you have another election to worry about.
I have an election in August. I have the primary in August, and hopefully I will get through that, and then I'll have a general election in November.
What are you doing to campaign?
My job right now isn't to campaign. I should be representing the people of District 23 in Jefferson City. So I know that that is a difficult mix. I guess I will eventually have some fundraisers and that sort of thing. But right now, my job is, I don't look at this as being I'm just the representative and I get to go to Jeff City and be a proponent for what I want. I represent the District 23, and we, as District 23, are in Jeff City. I am just your delegate to take your issues forth and push for them the best way I can. So I can just do what I think is, what I know is best, and that is to meet with my constituents, which I've done it. I did in December before I went down, and they gave me a whole list of these are your instructions, and I'm fine with that. And I think that's how we should do it. We'll have another community meeting on March 24th. And we will do that four times this year. We will have a mental health symposium, which I've done for the last 3 years with the help of my fellow sorority sisters of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority. Yay. We will probably pick up some things that Representative Dunn did on home buyer education. We will probably do a clothes drive in the winter, and we will do a can drive on Martin Luther King Day, which is another project I'm kind of pulling from what I've been doing with the sorority.
Representative Barbara Ann Washington has hit the ground running. Best wishes to you as you continue with this session.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on.
State House Blend Missouri is a production of KCUR Studios. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at PTSBrian. If you don't already subscribe, please do that wherever you get your podcasts, and review us and tell your friends. And don't forget to listen every week to an excerpt of our show on the air, including Barbara Washington's pick for a song that captures this moment in Missouri politics. That's Tuesdays at 11 on KCUR's Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening.